Welcome to Saints History, told and experienced the way God intended it, with excessive amounts of alcohol and cursing. The booze is probably bourbon because...
Other alcohols are for rich women on diets.
Now, here's your drunk Saints History host, who is...
bombed out of his gourd.
All right, it's time for another episode of Saints Drunk History. Today we are joined by Dave, who, like me, is totally shit-faced. Today's topic...
We've been drinking since 5:30.
We have been.
And it's currently 8:30.
It is. And
that's 3 hours of drinking.
And
my wife, you know, put the kids to bed. She left. She went out. And then I don't know where your wife is, but she's gone too.
Yeah.
It's just been two dudes drinking
all day. Alone,
but together in a way.
Yeah. Together, but not in the same place. So people were like, look, we love Ditka. We love the Ditka years, but could you do something fun and a happy memory? So today we're doing the 2009 NFC Championship game. And I want to start out by saying, while I am.
It was awesome.
It was awesome, but while I am completely not sober at this moment, the NFC Championship game was one of the probably handful of Saints games in the past 20 years where I did not have a drop of alcohol during or after, because I woke up, or I flew into New Orleans, and Saturday night, by 10 o'clock, I had 102 fever.
And, that sucks.
And I was just shot, and my mom was like, you can't go to the game. My mom was like, I don't think you can go to the game. I'm like, I don't care if I have fucking leprosy. I'm going to that fucking game. We're going to load me up in painkillers. We're going to load me up whatever it takes. I'm going. And like the AFC Championship game during the day, didn't see a play of it. Slept through all of it. Woke up, loaded myself up with paint, with meds and soda, and went to the game. So the NFC Championship game, it was interesting because I feel like in 2009, like halfway through the year, Saints fans were like, Minnesota's, that's the team. Like, we're 8-0, they're 7-1, like they're the team. We have to get home field, and they're going to be the team we play because Favre is playing out of his mind, even though he's 40 years old. And, you know, but Dave, wasn't that accurate? Isn't that not accurate?
Yeah, totes accurate. That was totes accurate.
So... the Saints.
What are you sipping on there, buddy?
I'm sipping on Basil Hayden. They should
sipping
be a,
on gin and juice.
They should be a sponsor. They are so good. They're only 80 proof, but you can drop a couple cubes in and just pour it in. It goes down smooth. You can drink it and drink it and drink it and drink it. And it doesn't hit you hard. It's sort of like a wave. It just sort of crests over you. So... the Saints
this is like that Seinfeld episode where Kramer is doing the pretend ad pitches for that that whiskey or whatever that was.
So good. So the Saints are playing the Vikings. By the way, Saints were 3.5-point favorite going into the game, but a lot of people like Minnesota. The Saints had sort of righted themselves, you know, because they lost the last three games. Then they just beat Minnesota like a rented mule, right? So we're feeling good. But going into the game, how nervous were you going into the Minnesota game, David? Were you like confident? Were you scared? How were you feeling?
Well, so you went to the game. You had 102 degree fever, but you toughed it out like a man, and you went to the game. I went to the game as well. We were in the same building at the same time. The night before, I had my Mardi Gras cruise ball. So Aaron and I, this was before we had kids. We stayed downtown at the Hilton Riverside where the ball was and stayed over that night, and then kind of spent the morning and the afternoon in the quarter. And we were kind of like, you know, playing tourist at home, and then went to the game at 6:30 or whenever it was. Was I nervous? Yeah, I was. Are you kidding me? I mean, this was the biggest game in Saints history. I mean, they had never been this far in the playoffs.
Well, they got to the NFC Championship in 06, but they'd never been at home.
Oh, yeah, that's true. You know what? That's right. I forgot about that. But, yeah, they'd never been at home. Never seemed, you know, it was, you know, it seemed like it was possible. It wasn't like they were totally, you know, out talented or anything like that. It was definitely nerve wracking, but it was fun spending the day in the quarter and seeing like everybody dressed up and into the game. I mean, it was like, there was like this energy, you know,
that crowd was lit because it was a 5:30 game. Like that stadium was, but I would say that stadium, I wouldn't say it was more intense or a better quote unquote crowd than the Gleason game or any other, but that crowd was the 2009 NFC Championship. It was different than the Gleason 2006 game. It wasn't better. It wasn't more intense, but it was different. It was this sort of like, the Super Bowl's right in front of us.
Well, like the Falcons game, you know, opening the dome in 2006. I mean, like, we didn't know how the game was going to go and how, you know, that Gleason was going to make the block and all that kind of stuff. I mean, with the NFC Championship game, we knew this was the biggest game.
Yeah, that's true.
Of the year. And, man, I'm talking about this now, and it's already bringing back all those feelings.
Yeah, the thing was interesting in that game, they got some weird fucking stats from this game. Did you know there was no sacks in this game? And
really?
That I was like, what? What? No. That can't be right. No sacks. But I feel like the Saints beat the shit out of Brett Favre during that game.
Yeah.
Oh, you know?
Because it was all late hits and illegal stuff.
Oh, man. it was dirty, man. Bounty
it
gate.
It was a little dirty. I mean,
worth it. If you'd have told me, if you'd have told me that it's going to cost you 2 second-round picks, but you got to beat the shit out of Brett Favre to get to the Super Bowl, I'd have been like, it could be 4 first-round picks, buddy. It could be 4 number 1s. I don't give a shit. Kill him.
I've been looking at the stats too. I looked at the stats before the game. If you had told me before the game that Adrian Peterson was going to have 3 touchdowns and Drew Brees was going to throw for less than 200 yards,
you'd be like, oh, shit.
I would be like, oh, we're fucked. It's going to be like 45-7. Great. And that's exactly what happened. I mean, those are actual stats. Adrian Peterson had 3 touchdowns in this game.
He also had 2 fumbles.
Yes, and that's the thing. And that's exactly why this game ended up turning in the Saints' favor. I mean, there were a lot of turnovers.
Minnesota turned it over 5. The Saints had their only turnover the whole playoffs. Reggie Bush fumbled a punt. But then Brett Favre and Adrian Peterson fucked up a handoff at like the 4-yard line, and the Saints got it right back. But this game, you look at the stats and you're like, man, Minnesota kind of kicked the Saints' ass if it wasn't for the turnovers. But the thing is for the Saints is that Courtney Roby ran back a kick almost for a touchdown, so the Saints had a short field. They got a bunch of short fields off the Vikings' turnovers. And
Pierre Thomas had the good kick return in overtime.
Yeah,
he took it back to like the 40.
Yeah, so we'll start in the first quarter. Minnesota comes down. They score. Adrian Peterson's great. The Saints are kind of struggling. Then they hit Pierre Thomas like a 40-yard, 38-yard pass. Catch and run, screen pass, touchdown is tied. This game was basically even the whole way. Like, no team was ahead by more than 7. Pierre Thomas, you know, everybody, that game you sort of remember Hartley and you sort of remember Tracy Porter, the legend. But Pierre Thomas, that game, Dave, he was so good. Just talking about the first half, he had a receiving touchdown and a rushing touchdown in the first half. He had 122 total yards, or 100 yards total of receiving and running, and the 40-yard kickoff return. So he's like, I feel like if you made a list of the greatest games in Saints history, I feel like when people made the list, Pierre Thomas, he wouldn't be on it for the NFC Championship. You'd have to remind them, but it's probably top 3 all-time greatest performances in Saints history, I would argue. Because remember, not only did he have the kickoff return in overtime, he had the 4th-and-1 where he dove over the top. So, I mean, that was just a world-class performance. And I think people, for some reason, it gets like his performance gets lost in the great moments of Saints history. God, I am so drunk.
Well, I mean, you know me. I'm a huge Pierre Thomas fanboy. I'm the leader of the I Love PT fan club. PT PT Bruiser, as we Cruiser, as we like to call him. It was an awesome game. I think that first receiving touchdown he had came off of one of those typical, perfectly run, beautiful screen passes.
He's so good at his screen.
That we used to. Well, he was good at it. I mean, because he was very good at reading his blocks and going the right direction, but also because he had fucking Carl Nix, Jari Evans, and Jermon Bushrod. I think Carl Nix and Jari Evans, I think both were first team All Pros that season. They had probably or arguably the best offensive line in the league that year, a difference, especially when you want to run a fucking screen play.
Well, here's the thing about that line. And people will remember it, is Jamal Brown, he won the annual injured groin award in training camp and was out for the year, and Bushrod started at left tackle all year. That line was so deep. Zach Strief, who the Saints had drafted in 06, in 09, he was still on the team, but he was tackle eligible, Zach Strief. That's how we knew him then. Right?
Yep, that's totally true.
And that's how deep they were.
I mean, Zach didn't really become a starter until
11, basically.
I don't even know if that. No, I thought it was like 13 or 14.
No, it was 11 because Stinchcomb came to camp and he retired because he was done. But the interesting thing, another thing about PT, as we, I don't know when people are going to hear this podcast, but the Saints are dealing with a trade. Maybe they'll trade with New England for Malcolm Butler. But fun fact, it didn't happen tonight, but in 2010, the Saints were this close to shipping Pierre Thomas to New England for a corner. This close. It didn't happen.
Yeah, it didn't happen.
So this back to this game. This game, it got weird in the second half, man. It got really weird. I mean, Adrian Peterson was fumbling all over the joint. The Saints had interceptions. Reggie Bush had the touchdown that they had the challenge on. This game got, Dave, it got weird in the second half. And I'm not just saying that because I'm shit-faced. Would you?
Yeah, but it was awesome. And it was, like, totally exciting. And I feel like if I was your average NFL fan who didn't care about the Saints or the Vikings, and I was just watching this game, you know, just because I love football. I mean, I would have been pretty happy with the game. It would have been pretty badass and fun to watch.
No, it was a great game to watch. It's kind of hard for me to I rewatched it to get ready for this podcast. I don't know how much I remember because
I watched highlights earlier. Yeah,
it's kind of because the thing is, you watched the Super Bowl. I feel like the Saints were the better team in the Super Bowl from the end of the first quarter on. This game, man. It was tight back and forth, and I mean, it had about two or three things that if it doesn't go the Saints' way, man, they are fucked. And the thing is, I wasn't that nervous going into the game because I was so sick. But if you would have told me when I woke up that morning, and it's true now that we know all the history post 2009, right, Dave? If you would have told me this is as close as the Saints are ever going to get to a Super Bowl in your life, which I'm pretty sure it's an accurate statement, Dave. If you'd have told me that when I woke up Sunday morning, I'd have peed my pants. I'd have been so nervous. That's how it sort of ended up after. We didn't know that at the time, right? We thought the window was opening. They're going to be really good. They might go back, blah, 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 blah. That's not how it went. But this game, man, it got really, really weird. And not just because of the ending sequence, which we'll get to in a second, but in the third quarter, Adrian Peterson scores, and it's 21-21. And
one of his three touchdowns.
One of his three touchdowns. He was simultaneously spectacular and terrifying for Saints fans. And spectacular and terrifying for Minnesota fans all at once. Like it was a masterclass of like everything a Hall of Famer player can be all at once. Because that's Adrian Peterson. Like you look at him and he's like you're like, oh my god, he's a force of nature, and oh my god, he's fumbling. He's putting like
Well, look, you know what? I rewatched some of the some of the highlights and the footage from that game. And, you know, some of those turnovers were just straight up the Vikings' fault. I mean, like, there was a bad handoff, I think, on the first fumble or whatever. But some of those fumbles, you know, were your awesome first year Greg Williams defense. I mean, Tracy Porter forced a fumble after a catch. And, I mean, he straight up just punched the ball. He literally had one thing on his mind and one thing only, and that was, I'm knocking this ball loose. And, you know, and he literally straight up just, if you watch the highlight, he straight up just punches through the guy's arm and tries to punch the ball through. And I think that's something that we don't see with today's Saints defense over the last few years. You know, they say they want to focus on turnovers, but I don't see that kind of stuff happening in the current Saints D. And I think that was the kind of stuff that was the reason the Saints were able to get that far, was their turnovers. I don't even know what they were. They were tops.
They had 34 turnovers, I thought. Like, it was
But they were at least like top five in turnover ratio. I mean, that's what's important, is turning, you know, getting turnovers and at the same time not turning the ball over. And their turnover ratio was tops. And that was just Greg Williams. I mean, he really, whether you like him or not anymore because of Bountygate and everything that's happened, whatever, but he came in here and he lit a fire under these guys' asses and said, you know, we're going to start getting turnovers. And, you know, it worked.
Yeah, so the funny thing was, and this is the God's honest truth, when Akeem dropped the ball, that game was getting out of control, and you were like, oh my God, the Rams are going to get, they were down, the Saints were up 31-7, and they're going to lose this playoff game, I can't believe this. And I turned to my mom, and I was like, Hakeem always fucking fumbles punts. He was born to fumble this punt, and he fumbled it. And coming down to that sequence for Minnesota at the end of the game, they're driving. It's 28-28. They're driving. You know, they got first and 10 at the Saints 33. They run Chester Taylor for no gain. They run Adrian Peterson for no gain. And then they had the fuck up where they had the 12 men in the huddle, right? And I turned to my mom and I said, Minnesota, they always fuck shit up. It's their destiny. They were born to do it. They lost four Super Bowls. Minnesota, if you look at their heartbreaking playoff losses since 1980, their NFC championship losses, they got blown out by the Giants. They lost in overtime to Atlanta when their kicker that hadn't missed all year missed. They lost to Washington to Doug Williams when the running back dropped the touchdown going in. So they have, like, heartbreaking losses. And I knew all this, and I was like, oh, my God, Brad Childress, you mustache-having motherfucker, you are going to fuck this up. And Brett Favre did a Brett Favre and rolled and threw it, and Tracy Porter said it. And Dave, you might tell me I'm completely wrong. For a split second, I thought Tracy Porter was going to take that to the house because he picked it off and he went up to the side and they had blockers. And I was like, oh, my God, he's going to the house. Is that just the joy? I stand by that.
I don't remember ever thinking that. I was just so, I mean.
That would have been the greatest thing
I
ever.
I think he realized that. I mean, there was like 4 seconds left. So.
Yeah.
I think
the Saints actually ran
two. It was more important to get down.
The Saints actually ran two plays. They ran a pass to Reggie Bush, and then Drew Brees was incomplete, I guess, on a Hail Mary from the Saints 48. And then we went to overtime, which, by the way, the Saints, I want to say during that year, had lost like 9 or 10 coin tosses in a row. And let me tell you something. Of all the great things that happened in the Super Bowl, the Tracy Porter interception against the Vikings, the interception against the Colts, the great play of Brees, and it is for naught if Will Smith doesn't make the correct call on the coin toss. Because I'm fucking telling you, both of those defenses were fucking done.
Well, it's funny because, you know, I remember being at the game and regulation time ends and it's tied. And I mean, I'm sure you felt the same way. Like emotionally, you're already like drained. You're like, yeah. I mean, you've been through every fucking emotion. You've been happy. You've been upset.
Yeah.
It's been a roller coaster for the last 60 minutes watching this game.
But you felt bad. You felt, I would say that's all true. But I felt really good because I felt like the Saints dodged the bullet. Like the Saints, if the Saints had drove down and Hartley had like missed the field goal and then you're going overtime, you'd be like, fuck, we're going overtime. It was like, yeah, we're going overtime, baby. It was a different kind of feel. I mean, there's different kind of overtime,
for me,
right?
I was like so I was emotionally fucked. Drained. I was so nervous. I was so anxious. And one of my big memories from the game, and I don't know why it is, but one of my big memories from the game is thinking, like, we've battled for these four quarters and we're tied, and now this whole goddamn game is going to come down to this coin flip. Because I mean, remember?
Yes.
Because I mean, this was before they changed the rule. This game was kind of the reason
why they changed
the overtime rule.
The media,
so this was back in when it didn't matter if you scored, you scored, and that was it. If you got the ball first and you scored, whether even if it was a field goal, that's it. Dunzo. And I vividly, vividly remember thinking like this is. I was angry almost because the Saints had battled against the Vikings for so long, and it's like, great, this is just going to come down to a stupid coin flip. Of course, they win the coin flip, and I'm like, yes.
Will
I was
Smith
like,
rip.
Okay, once they won the coin flip, that was when I was feeling more optimistic, I think, more like you were feeling.
Pierre Thomas runs a kickoff back 40 yards. I mean, the Saints, as we know, they suck at kickoff returns, but Pierre Thomas, 40-yard return. Then Pierre Thomas, 3 yards, 3-yard run. Reggie Bush, 1-yard run. Third down, key play, incomplete, but defensive holding, first down, Saints 48. Then he go incomplete David Thomas, then incomplete Colston. Then he hits Devery Henderson for 9 yards, and it's 4th-and-1 at the Minnesota 43, and it's like, what are you going to do?
4th-and-1, yeah.
If you miss it, they got the ball at the 40-fucking-3. They get a couple plays, they win. They go for it. Pierre Thomas kind of bobbled the ball over the top. He got it barely. They challenged it, but they couldn't figure out the spot, so they left it like it was. I mean, I guess he got it.
I just watched it 5-10 minutes ago or 20 minutes ago before we started this podcast, and he got it. I thought he was well over the line.
So then he hits. Then he gets it. Then they have another pass interference penalty on Minnesota. So the Saints have it at the 29.
Was that one on David Thomas?
Yeah. So Ben Lieber had the penalty. And that at that point, it's like a death spiral for Minnesota. You can look at it on the sideline. You can see they're in a death spiral. And look, we've been there, Dave. We've been there with the Saints where you fucking know it is all going wrong. It hadn't ended yet. It hadn't ended yet. But you know this is not
going to... It's over.
This is not ending well, right? So it's
it hasn't ended, but it's over.
But it's over. It's like the death. It's like walking to the electric chair. You know it's fucking... Come on. I mean, like I'm trying to think of a specific... Like, Detroit game 2 years ago, like when the Saints, like... Or 2014 when they blew it, right? You just like... You're like, I can't believe they're fucking blowing it. And it's not over, but it's over. So the Saints line up for the field goal, right? And I don't know how where you sit for field goals, but where we sit and we've sat the same, I can't really tell...
Me too.
If
yeah,
it's
I'm
good
in the same
or not.
Situation.
So I've learned over the 25 years that we have tickets.
You watch the crowd behind the
field
goal.
Watch the crowd behind the goal.
That's the trick.
And it's 99% of the time they're right. But like this past year versus the Raiders, the crowd got pumped and they did the thing because it was Lutz's kick was going and it drifted off right at the end. So I'm just like locked in on that crowd. Like behind that goal, I'm like, he's got to make this fuck. Kick and he kicked it, and as soon as it was in the air, the crowd is just there. I see two people like hugging. I'm like, yeah, it's any good. And like, I'm hugging my mom. Like, and the thing, I don't know how you are, but my section of people, like, we've all been in that section for like a decade, like, all of us, right? Or even longer, son of, like, some of us have been in there for like 15, 16 years. So, like, you're like, I wouldn't say they're like family, but you know them, right? You know.
Yeah, no, there's that's totally like it is where I sit. In fact, I mean, I've wanted to move a little bit higher and move a little bit further back in the plaza, but I don't, because I don't want to move away from all the people that sit near me that I've gotten to know over the last 10, 12 years. I mean, I have their phone numbers. You know, sometimes we just text or whatever, or talk, you know, in the off season or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's definitely like a family. And at that time, I was sitting behind Voodoo Man, who's a pretty well known super fan. And but for the NFC game, he came dressed as like, he was kind of like a devil. He looked like the devil, and he had a black robe on. And then he was wearing a giant clock around his neck, like what's his face, the rapper, what's his name?
Public Enemy.
Flavor
Flav.
Yeah, Flavor Flav. He had a giant Flavor Flav. He's dressed as the devil. Has a giant Flavor Flav clock pointed to hell freezing over, because that's what time it was, because the Saints were finally going to win
the championship game and
go to the Super Bowl. And then after that season, I think they moved him. They redid the plaza. Screwed up some of the seating.
Yeah. So, like, I'm hugging people. People are crying.
We're
all, like, holding arms and, like, swaying like teenagers at our high school. It was magical. I was so out of it from the fever and the soda. Like, I don't even really remember the post-game, like, the
You don't
trophy.
Remember Anthony Hargrave doing snow angels in the...
Not really. I don't really remember.
In the confetti...
I don't remember. I remember something. Sean Payton saying something about the dome being wet or whatever.
But there was a hole in the ceiling.
I remember Reggie Bush like plowing in the gumbo and like knocking him over like a bowling pin. But, like the rest of it, I don't really remember it. And so, like everybody, you know, you stay for the trophy presentation, and we just kind of stayed for a while, and like then we go out and. You go out and you know the energy when you're walking out the terrace and you're walking out the gates, when the Saints always win, there's always this fun energy. There was this joy, and the joy for 06 post Gleason wasn't like this joy. Like this joy was like getting married, having a kid, joy of 65,000-70,000 people just in the street, just joy. They had a band. Just, I don't know if they were doing loops around the dome or what, but they were just out there, man. And we were going out, and they're like playing out, walking down. It was phenomenal walking out the dome. But Dave, I walk out the dome, and we're having fun, and I'm thinking I'm all right. And we get out the dome, down the front thing. We go past City Hall, and I get like right to City Hall, and my body's like, oh yeah, buddy. You got 102 fever, and my body just shuts down, and I just start vomiting everywhere. And it's
what a wonderful memory.
What a wonderful memory. So I'm just like, because I had all the Coleman, and I was just drinking Cokes to just like whatever, you know, the caffeine or whatever. So I must have had probably like 5 of those souvenir cups of Coke during the game. And it all was like coming back up, and people were like going up to my mom. It's like, how much did he have to drink? You need some help? Is he gonna be all right? Jesus, he got shit faced. I'm like, I'm not drunk. I'm not drunk at all. And then I would throw like it was like the. I'm like, I'm not drunk. And then I'd throw up some more. Like I threw up, like it was like a stream of like into the gut. Like it was. I didn't think it was possible for a human body to throw up this much until I had a child. But it was not pretty. But that was my memory of it. How was your like go? Did you like go out after and celebrate, or did you just go home? How did you deal with it after?
You know what? It really wasn't that crazy. I mean, like you said, as you're walking out the dome, and I think I remember we went out the main Poydras exit, so we went down one of those two ramps. For some weird reason, I remember, like, they had one of those roadwork signs, those orange neon signs that you can program whatever you want into. And I remember, I think it said, like, we're going to Miami, you know, or something like that. And I just remember reading that and being like, that really got me pumped. Like, oh my God, like, I can't believe in 2 weeks the Saints are really going to play in the fucking Super Bowl. Like, this is really happening. But other than that, I certainly wasn't puking, thankfully. Sounds like that was miserable.
No.
But no, there wasn't any crazy excessive celebration that night. I think we just went home.
I went home and watched ESPN and fell asleep. no, but the fun thing was that it was a really touching moment. Like, because, like, we've had the Saints ticket since '89, so I guess that's going on.
Yeah,
like 28.
Way longer than me.
It's like 89, whatever. It's like 25 plus years, right? And the thing was, like, my dad, when the Saints started losing, he's like, to my mom, he's like, you bought him these tickets, you go to these goddamn games. So my mom started going to the games when I was, you know, 90, when I was like 14, 15. And so she was always like the really crazy Saints fan with me. So, like, we would always watch the Super Bowl, you know, before the Saints got it. And we'd be like, man, I wonder what it's like to go to the Super Bowl. That must be amazing. And we'd always, we probably, like, said that every Super Bowl to each other. And I remember getting home and my mom was like, this is so amazing. It's better than I ever thought it would be. And I was like, that's so true. And it was just like it was like a touching moment between a son and a son and a mom. But I was like, like, that's great, mom, I gotta go to bed now. But I mean, it was, and to think, like, here's the thing with the NFC championship, and I say this in all honesty, I don't know, in the last, say, dozen years before the Cubs won the World Series this year, I don't know if there's a fan base that had more fucking fun winning a championship than Saints fans. Because a lot of fans, the cities, they're used to winning something, right? Saints fans, like, we lived it up. Like, we're still Sean Payton, Mickey Loomis. Well, they did win the Super Bowl in 2009. You know, we still, like, we're still living off. Like, it's still a vivid memory. Like, it still hasn't passed. Like, we're still living off of it, I feel like, Dave.
You know, I've said it before, and I'll say it again. I've been to the Super Bowl when they won the NFC Championship game. I was at the Dome opener in 2006. I still, to me, the 2000. I mean, technically it was in 2010, but the 2009 season, the NFC Championship game against the Vikings is still, I think, probably the greatest game I've ever been to.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough.
It really does. It's just to me, I don't know why. It's just, you just mention it, and you know, you say the score or whatever, you mention the game, automatically go back, and I automatically just have these really very positive and very awesome feeling, just, and more so than even the Super Bowl.
I do too, even though I was deathly ill. It's just like it
because see, it just, that's how powerful it is.
That's how powerful it was. Like, I was deathly ill. I wasn't drunk at all. It was a great feeling because we were, if you're there for it, I think it makes it special. You know, and that's mm-hmm. Even though you
were, I was there for the Super Bowl,
but you were in the press.
Even being there,
when you were in the press box.
No, I'm ready. Yeah, I know exactly. And I couldn't cheer except for when Tracy Porter.
And you're like, yeah. So
yeah. So like somebody threw a pen at me.
So this is wraps up this episode of Drunk History. We probably missed some stuff because me and Dave were plowed. We probably missed great details. But anyway, I hope you enjoyed it.
I felt like we covered it pretty good.
I think we did too. So until next week.
Pretty
we'll be back
good.
For another episode of Drunk History next month. Thanks for joining us and thanks for donating.
Thanks to all of our Saints Happy Hour listeners whose donations made Drunk Saints History possible. Until next time, remember, surviving Saints history is hard. That's why God made alcohol.